concerns me is that when we're talking about education, sometimes we use education as a barrier to prevent ourselves from becoming further involved. That we feel we need to reach out and further educate people, and that all those other things that get put aside in order that we think that we educate. And I heard a sister this morning who said, well, a woman who sits at home knows that she can't buy a bag of milk for her kid. Now, what more education is required for a poor person to stand up and fight? Do they have to know the difference between capitalism or how it corporations or global capitalism or global whatever? What people need to know, they already know.
For example, the poverty situation now is the worst as it's ever been. And, you know, the availability of jobs in the future is abysmal. And, you know, and there are certain policies that the department has, such as the economic unit policy, that prevents people from living together who are on income assistance, which, you know, it doesn't happen in any other country in the damn world that I can think of, which is, you know, extremely discriminatory. I mean, people are, you know, all of a sudden secondhand citizens because they're on income assistance, and especially the single employables. Then, of course, you can't get assistance if you know, you need an address to get assistance. Now, if your address is costs more than what you get on welfare, then you won't get welfare because you're living beyond your means. So, in other words, you have to find the most decrepit hole to live in. And the rates of assistance, therefore, become dependent on the market value of rents and on the landlords' associations, etc. You know, this is just preposterous. And this is the kind of situation we have in New Brunswick. No wonder people are homeless. No wonder, you know, no one can live on $264 a month. A lot more people spend that on toiletries than what these people have to live on. And, you know, it's just ridiculous. And then, you know, $19 extra for every child that you have. It just goes on and on. And, you know, if you live on Dune Street or someone subsidized housing, you're the aristocrats of the poor set, because most people are caught on the economy. Most people are caught in a situation of not having any money left over after you pay rent. And, it's the responsibility of government to do something about this. But they continually refuse. And that's why I say, you know, it's planned poverty. It's there to prolong the poverty situation. And that's what we said in our Constitution way back in 1983. We are dedicated to destroy planned poverty. In other words, the government has to do something about it. We don't support any political parties, but we will support political parties that help the poverty situation, help to alleviate. So that's some idea of what we're about. We consider ourselves to be a people's organization.
Welcome, bienvenue. You're listening to CKUT, broadcasting live from the streets of Montreal. This hour of the broadcast, we're going to be taking a look at the issue of Indigenous people and homelessness. Homelessness without reserve, sans abri, sans réserve. Joining us today is well-known filmmaker Alanis Obomsawin. And we also
we're going to be joined with other people from the Nunavut. We're going to have people from the Agvik Society, and Agvik Society is a women's shelter at Iqaluit. And actually, is there people from Iqaluit online with us?
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome. Bienvenue.
And I was wondering if Joshi Timothy from the Okota shelter is with us too.
Hello.
Still sick, Joshi?
Yes, it is.
Getting better? Are you getting better, Joshi?
Oh, yeah. Feeling a little better today.
Excellent. And we also have with us today Jason.
Jason Koenig.
Hello. Can you PC?
And Kat.
And Katarina. Yeah. So hello. Jason is an artist coming from Igloolik, and who is now settled down in Montreal. So we might talk with him about the fact of living his own community for living in a town like Montreal. But maybe, Neil, we could start with
Alanis.
Yeah,
definitely. Alanis, I'd really like to talk to you. Maybe you can get to talk to our audience about how you see the homelessness issue as it affects Indigenous people. You're a First Nations woman, and what's your perspective from being behind the camera? What do you see?
Well, in 1988, we did a campaign to start a women's shelter in Montreal for Native women in the city who were homeless or coming into town and not having any places to go or not knowing much about a city. And that made a very big difference for us. At the time, we felt that we wanted a shelter for men also, and they told us that because of the number of shelters that there were in existence already in Montreal, that we would have no success. So this was the reason why we started to work with the women in particular to make sure that we would get one for them. And that was extremely difficult in terms of not only with money, but with relations. We would read the papers, and there would be a house for rent on the street somewhere in Montreal, and we'd send somebody to see if we could rent it to start a shelter. And we were always refused. And people would say, oh, no, we don't want any homeless people on our street. And there was a lot of problems.
What did you do to get these people in homes?
Well, to make the change, first of all, we raised a lot of money ourselves. And I made a film, it's called No Address, on the Native homeless people in Montreal. And when we premiered it, we did a big thing. We charged $50 for people to come in and see the film as a premiere. And we did an auction with artwork that many people had done, a lot of Native people and some non-Native. And we made $18,000 in one night.
Nice.
Yeah, it was big for us. And we collected friends and from a lot of people, and we came to a point we had $85,000. So the city kept promising us that they would help us and that we would have a building, but it was just not happening. So I felt in 1987, as I'm not spending another winter like that, some of the women I would keep in my house and some other people would, and we were not equipped to really help people who not only are they homeless, they come with a bag of loads of trouble and having been abused or having sometimes drug or alcohol problems. Mm-hmm. And they're very lonely and it just get from bad to worse. And so it's not just a building that you need. You need the services and you need people that have experience as to help them in their minds and spiritually and physically. It's a lot of... It's not just not having a home. Uh-huh. It's a lot of things that you have to consider and have to provide for the people.
Where were a lot of these people coming from?
There were a lot of them come from many communities. A lot of them come from up north. A lot of people, Indian and Inuit people, would come. And they come to here, and often it's the first time they come here, and they're very attracted by... Oh, it's so busy here, and they come from such quiet places where there's not so much to do. And often they wish to stay, or sometimes, they drink and they can't go back, they don't have the money. And there's all kinds of reasons. Some of them come to study, and some of them come because they're not well and they need medical attention. Mm-hmm. And so no matter what the reason is, the services that we provided with the shelter was extremely helpful. Whoever wanted to come in or needed a place, it was there for them. And it's still there.
Okay. Well, let's continue this conversation, but let's first get the 1-800 number out.
We have like...
Oh, man.
Olivier.
Sorry.
Who?
Martians have taken over the radio waves. The 1-800 number, if you'd like to talk to any one of the panelists tonight, or if you have a comment of your own, if you'd like to share your own insight into this issue of Indigenous people and homelessness, please give us a shout. The number is 1-866-763-4136. One more time, that's 1-866-763-4136.
And actually, if you don't know and you're somewhere in Canada, you know what you're listening to. You're currently listening to the second homelessness marathon in Canada. And you were mentioning this free toll number. And actually, we already have someone online with us. This person is Jimmy K. Jimmy K, are you here with us? Can Jimmy K is from the Cultural Council in Aboriginal Tumivut, a youth cultural center, it seems. Jimmy K, are you with us?
Hello, Jimmy.
So, well, maybe Jimmy will come back later. And actually, at 2 o'clock, 2 a.m., we'll have a specific panel about youth. And okay. So, yeah, okay. And the free toll number is 1-866-763-4136.
Awesome. Right now, why don't we have a couple of comments having to do with how homelessness affects Indigenous people as a rural problem. A lot of times we hear about it, how it affects people in the city. This is the image we normally have of homelessness, but we don't really hear about how this is also a problem for people who don't live in cities and how it's a much more complex problem in a lot of ways.
Jason, you're coming from Iglulit and you've been staying in Montreal, and you've been through like a warning experimentation, like leaving your community and now being in Montreal. And Alanis was just talking about trying to build a shelter for people living from coming from different communities and being here in Montreal. And what is your experience toward that?
With my own experience and the people that I know who are homeless. First of all, I came from far way up north in Nunavut, where I grew up with these family, strong family ties, with country food, and where we could go visit our families without appointments or etc. But coming here to Montreal is very, very different from where I grew up, where my people was teaching me the beliefs, and I think that it's a strong base to my mind and my body. And when I first came here, everything was taken away from, like, I had no more family to visit, can't use my language here, can't eat the country food. So I think a lot of the problems started happening there, and I think most of the people that I know are having very similar situations where their base of their teaching is already not here in Montreal, and I think that's when the problem is starting to happen. That's where the problem starts, like the alcohol and other things. And I think from there the problems keeps going. And I think that some people doesn't want to face their problems or doesn't want to deal.
Well, Jason, can you say a bit more about what some of your beliefs were which you brought here to Montreal, and then you found that it was difficult to hold them, it was difficult to keep these beliefs?
First of all, family. Family is very strong. That you would help your friends or your family. You visit your grandparents and talk to them. But here, it's very hard to get around, and it's quite far, and have to make an appointment to go visit them on certain times. And it's very different like that.
Um, You mentioned earlier the specific kind of issue that you had to deal with like people, women coming here in Montreal. Maybe could you tell us more specifically about these issues? And actually, I just would like to mention to the people listening to us at ICAL with the people from the AGVIC Society, feel free to jump into the conversation as any of our listeners. You can call us through the toll-free number, which is 1-866-763-4136.
Yeah.
If you have any question.
Yeah, that's right. If anything sounds interesting, please don't wait for a pause in the conversation. We'd love to hear your opinion, so please just jump right on in. Exactly.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest shock for our people is coming to a place where you're made to feel you're not welcome in a house or on the street, that people don't like to see you there. And I know that for a lot of people, especially from up north, they have not experienced that. And they come here, and after a while, they don't know how to identify it, but it's there. And that is brings you more into a disliking of yourself, feeling that you're not as good as someone else. You know, all those things that are surrounding those kinds of feelings. And it doesn't take much. It could be on the street, some of them, or maybe they're begging and somebody passes by and look at them like as if they're horrifying people, or insult them or ignore them. And that's a very difficult thing, because when you're reduced to having to beg for some money, I would think that in general it's not because you think this is the greatest thing to do, it's because there's nothing left to do. And I think for anyone who passes by, you know, if you don't want to give anything, you can at least smile, you can at least acknowledge that this is a human being. And it has feelings. And this is what I find the most difficult. And you know, when we were looking for places, we ended up renting an office on the main street. Everything we're doing was against the law, because the building didn't even have a bathroom. We got a plumber who came in and he fixed a toilet for us. We didn't have a back door. Like, everything was against the rule. But I said, I don't care. We're going to rent this place, and we're going to start with some beds.
Good for you.
And I work at the National Film Board, and I put a sign, and there were so many people from there that said, Alanis, I have a bed I'm not using, or bureau. We furnished the whole place with donation. We only paid for a washer and dryer, everything, and nice things. It wasn't junk thing that people gave us. And overnight almost, we had a shelter that was against the law. So it's very funny. That's when the city start moving. They would come in and check us, and they say, oh, you can't do this. You're not allowed to do this. I say, yeah, well, make us a building, you know. And eventually, by 1988, we got a building going, which is still there. And we had 16 rooms, and now, you know, they've enlarged it. But it took the movement from us, because you can wait 10 years for a decision. But I felt we're going to do it ourselves. We're going to raise everything we can, and we're doing this. I don't care that it's not right, or, you know, police might come. We're doing it, and we did it, and that's how everybody moved after that. You know, you have to be very determined. And we had a ball doing it too. You know, we got people from the street to come and help us for that evening at the auction. They were all nice and clean, dressed up, and they were serving people, smiling. It was a wonderful evening. And it was just to show that those people have a heart just like anybody else, and just make them feel welcome anywhere. And you see, you meet someone that you just have no clue about. That is beautiful.
It's so inspirational to hear a story like that.
Yeah.
And it seems that we lost at one point people from Nunavut. Are you back online? Mary, are you still on air?
Mary? Okay. Mary's going to come back.
Okay, Mary's going to come back.
Yeah.
And Joshi, are you here?
Joshi's on.
Neither.
We'll get back to Joshi too. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about Joshi.
Joshi?
They can't hear us.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, it's Mary.
Yes.
How are you doing, Mary?
What's it like there? Where are you guys? Where are you? Tell us. Where?
In Nunavut. We're in Iqaluit. It's the capital of Nunavut.
Uh-huh.
And
how many people are there, right?
28,000 people.
Wow.
We have 26 communities, 3 regions.
Is it very cold out there? Oh, how cold?
I don't even know what the temperature is right now. My cold tonight.
How hot is it?
minus 21.
Oh, yeah.
Minus 21.
Can you pity?
Actually, we're talking with Alanis about the difficulties of trying to build a house for homeless people. And maybe Joshi or Mary or someone from the Agri Society might speak about the same experience that you went through at Iqaluit, how hard it was for trying to open houses for housing people. And in the case of Agri Society, where comes this need of opening a place for women coming from different communities? Are we
losing?
Are we still with you?
Take an EPC Suri.
Hey.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you can speak in Inuktitut, and Jason will do the translation if you feel it.
Angit
kahangin lang ni kito nga haklo ni asok na tugalaw sa mga duki sa simatsegala na nga kiyo madunga taggaw na.
Utak tigi akadlo na chito translate akadlo niya kama. She was saying that a lady from Iqaluit, it's very hard to be homeless with a kid, and she just got in the conference, so she's just starting to pick up.
And Joshi, are you online with us?
Yes, I am.
So could you share with us the experience of opening the Okoda shelter?
Well, I could also give a brief history of the women's shelter.
Yeah.
The women's shelter used to be based in Iqaluit, the big part of what we used to call Frobisher Bay. And there were so many abused women and so many women being assaulted throughout Nunavut that they were always full, and they had to turn women away, and the building that they had got to be quite old. And when the treatment center closed down here, it was almost a brand new building when it closed. So the women's shelter was moved into the treatment center, which was bigger and better than what the women's shelter had before. Because in the old women's shelter, they used to be very crowded. And it was very bad for the health of the children and the women to have so many people in such an old building and so close together. And so now that they're in the new building, there's a big cost associated with that as well. For us, for the Ohuta Emergency Shelter, we opened in a three-bedroom house, and it was full every night, and because there were homeless people, and the building that we got was quite old, the health inspector closed it down, and they bulldozed the building into the ground because it was condemned. And so for about 6 months, we had no homeless shelter, and the homeless people had to sleep at the police station. And I think it was the pressure from the police and from the municipality and the homeless people. The local housing authority, the public housing, they give us another old building, but they fixed it up. And so...
Yeah.
And the fire marshal said we could only have so many people in there. So we... In the new homeless shelter, we couldn't keep the same numbers of homeless people as before. Now we can only allow 14 people in per night. Mm-hmm. And every night we usually turn away anywhere from 4 to 6. And then there's usually 4 or 5 on top of that that phone. Mm-hmm. And... there's regularly, out of the 14, there's 10 who practically live at the homeless shelter.
I'm curious. I want to like you. I would like you to talk about how is it that in our communities now that we have such a need? Because if we're talking about years past, there was no such thing as homeless people in a, on a reserve or in a northern community. Perhaps there was abusive things done to the women or vice versa at that time, and we were just living with it. Why is it now that there is now in some communities homelessness, which was never heard of before? Do you think that is there something that's coming from us at the community level that makes it that way? Have we lost generosity to take care of each other? Why is it that we are homeless in our own land, in our own communities? What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's, as a Native society, the federal government forced us to bring in a system which was foreign to us. In 1969, when... we had the first generation of Inuit people moving into communities and building houses in the 1960s. Most of the communities in Nunavut, very few of the buildings are more than 15 years old. Buildings are new to us up here, at least on this scale. But in 1969, government took away our houses and forced us to go into public housing. Before, we used to have a society which was a hunting society, but in 1969 they shot our dogs and we had to adopt a new lifestyle. And I think the combination of losing the houses, the esteem, and being forced to live with paying rent when you never had to pay rent before, and then electricity, and then having to live in a community and to work at a job during the day. Now, a lot of these things are brand new. Like, for instance, I was the first one in my family born in a house. All my older brothers and sisters were born in the winter in a tent with an igloo over it, or in the